welcome to a special edition. As usual, it is special, the November 13th, 2009 edition of Anti-Psychiatry Radio. So friends and activists and survivors, it's so good to be able to reach out to you for the second time this year. And we are back. Yes, CKLN and Anti-Psychiatry Radio are back. Now, as I mentioned in the a couple weeks ago in the show, that there are some basic facts, and I won't go into them again, but essentially what anti-psychiatry is a political strategy that targets the psychiatric system itself. We want to dismantle it, friends, and we, through strategic political actions. Anti-psychiatry is a critiques forced treatment, including plus incarceration, which I call psychiatric imprisonment. And it is a movement that is around the world, not in every country, but it's spreading. Now, this evening, I'm going to talk a little bit about a couple deaths and inquests that point up, that show how serious these abuses are. Some of you already know who are survivors, and why we need an anti-psychiatry perspective on what is happening. These are deaths that should never have happened, but it's important to talk a little bit about them, much more than the mass media do. One death, which was mentioned in the media but is important, involves Jeffrey James, a black man who died from restraints at the notorious Center for Addiction and Mental Health. Now, restraints, unfortunately, are common on virtually every ward in every psychiatric facility. People also refer to them as cuffs. People have their wrists and ankles cuffed because they are judged, usually erroneously, as a threat to staff or as dangerous. In fact, people are put into physical restraints for petty reasons. Here's what I wrote shortly after the end of the inquest, which I observed in October of 2008. For two or three days, I attended the recent inquest into the tragic death of Jeffrey James. It ended in Toronto on October 10th, 2008, although there were some good and detailed recommendations from the Empowerment Council and the coroner's jury. The jury did not demand the end of physical restraints. I'm talking about two-point and four-point restraints and seclusion, otherwise known as solitary confinement. But the Empowerment Council raised this issue. And the jury should have at least recommended phasing out all physical restraints and seclusion because they're forms of cruel and unusual punishment or torture. The fact is that physical restraints triggered the pulmonary thromboembolism, a blood clot in the lungs that traveled from James' leg, that killed Jeffrey James. A young 34-year-old black man, Jeffrey, died a horrible death in the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, Toronto's notorious psycho prison, on July 13, 2005. Approximately 1 month before he died, James had been transferred from Oak Ridge Penitentiary Mental Health Center, another Ontario psycho prison notorious for its brutality. He ended up on CAMH's medium security unit, 3-2, but not for long. For 5.5 consecutive days, Jeffrey was severely restrained, tied down with 4-point restraints, wrapped around his ankles and wrists, forced to lie on his back so he couldn't move his arms and legs, forbidden to get up and exercise. Also chemically restrained, that is forcibly drugged, with the powerful neuroleptic loxapine and the minor, so-called minor tranquilizer, lorazepam, while languishing in solitary confinement. CAMH psychiatrists and doctors repeatedly ordered physical restraints and seclusion. In fact, they didn't even examine Jeffrey before writing restraint orders. Facts confirmed during the cross-examination of doctors Sue and Darby by lawyer Anita Zaghetti. Psychiatrist Sue was the last doctor to see Jeffrey. He wrote restraint orders 1 and 2 days before Jeffrey died. And according to lawyer Zaghetti, who represented the Empowerment Council at the inquest, Dr. Sue also failed to request an external consult or a second opinion after 72 hours of continuous physical restraint. This sounds unethical to me, and it may to you, certainly a violation of hospital or provincial government restraint guidelines, medical neglect, or a breach of medical ethics. It's bizarre as to how James ended up in physical restraints and seclusion in the first place. The psychiatrist threw James into seclusion, or solitary, after some nurses complained to a psychiatrist that James was, quote, masturbating, close quote, in front of the nursing station. Horrors at such inappropriate sexual behavior, for God's sake. Although he was previously accused of sexual assault, James had not assaulted or harmed any CAMH staff or patient. It's also important to point out that no nurse or no psychiatrist bothered to communicate with and understand James as a person before he died. Apparently, dialogue, not to mention empathy or compassion, is a privilege at CAMH and other Ontario psycho-prisons. 2-point and 4-point physical restraints and seclusion in psychiatric facilities absolutely constitute cruel and unusual punishment or torture. Sanitize this treatment. And I'm thinking of reporting these psychiatric tortures to Amnesty in International in the United Nations Committee Against Torture. In fact, I already did. However, I'm not hopeful of action since neither human rights body has officially condemned physical restraints, forced drugging, or electroshock as forms of torture. So far, no doctor or psychiatrist is being held accountable for Jeffrey James' death. Unfortunately, the Coroner's Act of Ontario forbids the coroner or coroner's jury from blaming or charging anybody with unethical conduct or a crime. So let's get real here. Like coroners, most judges uncritically and typically believe that psychiatrists' fraudulent medical model is, quote, medical science, close quote. Coroners and judges rarely challenge psychiatric expertise. They rarely question bogus psychiatric procedures, including forced drugging, electroshock, physical restraints, or seclusion. Nevertheless, some of the jury's 66 recommendations were constructive and helpful, if acted on. For many years, the Ontario government has been notoriously and routinely negligent in refusing to enforce jury recommendations, especially those concerning psychiatric survivors and homeless people. One recommendation in the James inquest states that the Chief Coroner of Ontario must call an inquest when anybody dies while in physical restraints. But why limit this call to only physical restraints? Many more psychiatric prisoners, otherwise called involuntary psychiatric patients, also die from chemical restraints or forced drugging. Some have died from electroshock. Obviously, this recommendation doesn't go far enough. When a person dies in an Ontario jail or prison by whatever means, the coroner must call an inquest. But the coroner doesn't have to call an inquest if a person dies in a psychiatric facility or mental health center, and that's according to the Coroner's Act. This decision is, in other words, discretionary. It's up to the, it's subjective. In a recent human rights case, the Ontario Human Rights Tribunal justly and wisely ruled that inquest into deaths in psychiatric facilities should be mandatory, just as they are for prisons. But an Ontario Superior Court judge recently overruled this important tribunal decision. In the meantime, physical restraints, seclusion or solitary confinement, trauma, deaths, and cover-ups continue at CAMH and every other psycho prison in Ontario and other provinces. Unfortunately, psychiatric torture is not and never was an election issue. It's not on the radar of the CBC or the Globe and Mail or the Toronto Star. It should be. This is another national and international shame. And I want friends to know that there have been mild criticisms of physical restraints, which killed Jeffrey James and continues to kill hundreds. In the United States, there was a study showing that over 150 people died in a period of a few years. That, fortunately, that was through investigative reporting by the Hartford Courant. Unfortunately, we have no such investigative reporters in Canada that give a damn about exposing psychiatric torture masquerading as mental health treatment. Let's take a break now, friends. I'm going to go into another a very important death and an inquest that should have been called but is not, something that you should know about. So can we, there is this, what you'll be hearing is Ellis's The Catch the Spirit, Catch the Spirit, track one of this album called Streets. So let's play that. Okay, Kristen. I owe all of you listeners a little apology. The full name of the artist, of the writer of the song, writer is Roger Ellis, and you'll be hearing more from Roger. Is a very well-known folk singer, and that what you heard an excerpt from Catch the Spirit, and certainly we do need a lot more spirit, fighting spirit, friends, in order to resist psychiatric abuses and oppression and fight for our rights. So thank you very much to Roger Ellis and the Full Circle Band in the Streets album, which speaks to freedom and human rights, which are denied and which in the system which we have to fight for. Okay, the second item on our agenda this evening concerns the tragic death and of a brother, Kulme Agene, this year, March 1st, and I want you to know about this, and I am depending on his sister, Uba, who very, very graciously allowed, and the lawyer representing the family has allowed me to read this press release and comment on it from this last September. Who was Kulme Agene? He was born in Eritrea, a Canadian citizen, yes, and a very bright man, a very committed man in the best sense of the term. Only 22 years old, Kulme Agene died while in the care of Penetanguishene Mental Health Center run by the Government of Ontario. Some believe this facility is unfit for human habitation and one of the most barbaric treatment centers in Canada. Many of you will recognize what Penetang you often call it. Kulme had been held involuntarily at Penetanguishene Mental Health Center for 15 months. Prior to that, he was held at the Whitby Mental Health Center for a period of 2 years. All the while, his doctors experimented on him with medications that did not make him better, but made him much more depressed and more vulnerable. He was scared, isolated, and lonely. He was also at the mercy of the staff at Penetanguishene. He had been transferred from a minimum security mental health facility in Whitby to Penetanguishene's maximum security facility, generally known as Oak Ridge. And why was he transferred? Because he did not agree with the medication and treatment they were subjecting him to. He believed the drugs were making him ill, and they were. He was assessed and diagnosed with, quote, schizophrenia, I may add parenthetically, another fraudulent psychiatric label. Prior to this diagnosis, it was believed he had bipolar disorder. According to family members, Kulme was a gentle giant. Penetanguishene and comments left by Penetanguishene's sympathizers close to the situation create their own version of Kulme as the big, scary black man. Nothing could be further from the truth. Kulme became depressed at the age of 18. He was likely misdiagnosed at that time with bipolar. He was heavily medicated. The medication made him hallucinate, and the side effects made him even more depressed. This deeper depression as a result of the medication is more common than the big pharma industry would like us to believe. It was then, while on medication, not before, he began to hallucinate and stole a car. In July, Bob Fideman, author of Seroksat sufferers uploaded a story called Leading the Lambs to Slaughter. It was another story about Penetanguishene's mental health center and the abuse of staff power. Many were residents of Penetanguishene who either worked there themselves or have family members who worked there were angry about the story. 2 months later, when Kokulme's story hit the news, it was reproduced on the blog. An interested party left a comment. Notice that not once did they refer to the victim by name, so forth. Not only that, they implied anyone who expressed concern and disgust with Penetanguishene was obviously mentally ill and must be familiar with the wrong side of the law. The author who left the comments seemed completely at ease, leading readers to believe Kulme deserved what he got, as though he were some barbarian that had been on the loose. She also pointed out that the picture supplied for the newspaper's original report of Kulme's death was not the way he looked while at Penetanguishene Mental Health Center, as though a person's physical appearance makes him more or less of a monster. Uba Agane, Kulme's sister, told me that the picture had been taken in 2008 while at Whitby. While at Penetanguishene Mental Health Center, Kulme was clearly abused by the staff. His rights were violated at nearly every single turn. Was his race the issue? Uba Agane, Kulme's sister, pointed out that in her brother's medical records, he was listed as a, quote, landed immigrant, close quote. He was not. He was and will forever remain a Canadian citizen. Staff made it impossible for him to pray. In 2008, Kulme was held in isolation, most often restrained for longer than seven days. In 2008, Kulme was held in isolation, most often restrained, at least 10 times, and for as long as 46 consecutive days. Can you imagine that in solitary? In 2009, between January and March 14th, he was confined to the same kind of barbaric isolation for at least 55 of the 73 days. When a patient is ordered to remain in isolation for longer than 7 days, the hospital must, by law, present the patient's case to a review board to prevent abuse of the system. Penetanguishene never did inform the review board at any time. His room, where he was kept isolated and restrained for 23 hours a day, was hidden behind a steel door that was behind bars, located behind a window. Kulme was denied a mattress to sleep in. He slept on a cloth such as the one you might use on your dining room table to sleep on, and only the use of a toilet. There was no sink or running water to maintain his own personal hygiene, nor clean himself to prepare for his daily prayer. While Kulme was drugged and isolated, the staff were cruel to him and made him wear a muzzle like a dog. If this is not destroying, I don't know what is. According to the staff, quote, an altercation took place between Kulme and the attendants. See how they sanitized their abuse. The attendants gained control of the situation and decided to take him back to the hole in isolation you would not condemn an animal to. They made the young man walk backwards. One attendant held him up by his chin. Once Kulme was back in his prison-like cell, which was more suited for Hannibal Lecter than a sick person with a legitimate illness, that was there for treatment, not punishment. The staff decided to inject him with 75 milligrams of zuclopentaxol, a very dangerous, powerful neuroleptic. This is a very powerful drug and is not without possible severe and life-threatening effects. Less than 10 minutes later, Kulme Agane was lying dead on the floor. Staff had stood outside the door watching him die. Now, I'm going to skip Friends because of time, but I just want you to know that the police were called. When they arrived at the scene 3 hours later after he died, the staff had cleaned up the room where Agnew had taken his final breath. Dr. Andrew McCallum had made the unilateral decision that the cause of death will not be released until after the inquest and when the decision of whether or not there will be a criminal investigation. And by the way, Friends, there is still no inquest called, although the OPP, I understand, are conducting a criminal investigation. So maybe they are taking this seriously for a change. In recent years, the Canadian Mental Health Association, otherwise known as CMHA, along with other mental health care advocates and, of course, pharmaceutical companies with financial interest in mental illness, have tried desperately to eradicate stigmas, hoping more people will get more mental health treatment for their undiagnosed or alleged illnesses. It's okay. Trust us. We are here for you. We care. We want to help you. That's BS. 1 in 4 people will develop some form of alleged mental illness, so-called. You are not alone. Kume, you have rights. That was submitted, written by Kume's sister, Uba, who is bravely, very courageously waging a very, with other members of her family and activists in the community, a campaign for justice, justice for Kulme. And I am feel privileged to be part of that campaign. And I do what I can on CKLN to let you, the reader, know about this serious, most serious injustice, which is likely to be covered up, by certainly the guards and the OPP, but we shall see. I will keep you informed. Anyway, that is basically the two major items. I have a few that I wanted to share with you tonight, Friends, to show you that these deaths are continuing. This is not an isolated case. There have been hundreds of deaths in Penetang that have not been aired, serious abuses. There's a class action case coming, and you will know about this, a very big one that will be possibly the biggest one in Ontario, if not Canada. Now, one more thing, I just want you to know that for more information about anti-psychiatry, Friends, please, if you've got a computer, go to CAPA. That's the group I'm proudly with, CAPA.OISE. That's OISE, .UToronto.ca. I'll repeat it, CAPA.OISE, .UToronto.ca. And you can find, if you click on one of the links, CAPA's anti-psychiatry fact sheet, in which lays out myths and misperceptions of what anti-psychiatry is and what the facts are. And one more thing, I will be giving a lecture. This is the final thing I must say, which hasn't happened in a long time, a public lecture on anti-psychiatry and the struggle to ban electroshock, which you've heard me talk about several times, including 2 weeks ago. This will be at the University College at 15 King's College Circle. Now, that's just at room 183. So I'll repeat that. It's coming up this Tuesday, November the 17th, 3 to 5 p.m. at 15 King's College Circle, room 183. And for more information, you can this is being held during the free university week, free education week, sponsored by the Alliance, by the Association for Part-Time University Students, and it's well worth your time. And Murphy Brown on Feminist Radio will be giving you some more details on the schedule this Sunday. And so stay tuned for more. And by the way, I'll be coming. The next anti-psychiatry program is 2 weeks from now on the 27th. Same time, same station, I'm proud to say. And for the, you can mark this in your calendar. Every second and fourth Fridays at 6:30 to 7 p.m. I'll be holding forth here. And if you want to make any comments, please, when stay tuned, and when the phones are working, which will be soon, right, Kristen? So I'll be wrapping up, and stay tuned for the next show with Marielena Escobar-Ventana Barrios, another dynamite show. So we'll see you, friends, and don't keep quiet about your right. Speak out. And stay tuned to CKLN, Revolutionary Radio. We are back. Thank you.